know it's Thursday because I'm doing a pure decking. At least I hope to God it's Thursday. I'm losing all conception of time since I took all this week off work. June 27th, I don't know, 2042. This is the show about stuff that interests me. I'm Morps, and tonight I have RU486, The Sard and the Suave. I am working on my last Newcastle. What are you guys drinking?
Manhattan.
I am all out of beer, so I'm going to go hit the rum.
Good man.
Yeah.
Coffee. Big bucket of coffee.
Just the bucket. I'd be afraid to ask what a bucket of coffee cost at Starbucks.
Yeah, the bucket, I've never been to a Starbucks, dude.
Really?
Never been.
Okay, we know what we're doing. When, you know, add that to the list for the meetup.
I don't have that much money.
No, I just want to see your reaction walking in there.
Why are they horrible, are they?
It's very pretentious.
Oh, God, is it ever.
Really?
I just want to see a wig out and start eating some hipster with their own MacBook.
I was going to say, only if it's a Mac can you bring it in there.
Oh, okay, they don't allow PCs.
Yeah,
it's not that they don't allow them, it's just you get a lot of weird looks.
It's frowned upon.
And somebody walks up, excuse me, just what do you think you're doing? I mean, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, God, really?
I've seen it.
Oh.
I've actually seen somebody in a Starbucks start berating somebody for using a Lenovo laptop.
Oh, God.
Wouldn't you just beat them to death with your laptop and go, no, see, it is better.
Yeah.
It was actually really funny because the guy told the kid to fuck off and get a job.
Nice.
So, anyways, hi there, Big. You just listening or are you actually going to talk?
There's your answer.
Well, there's our
all
answer.
Right.
So I don't have to add Big to the list. So, anyways, let's go ahead and move on to our discussion topic for tonight. And this, I was kind of working on my storage room a bit today. I've thrown probably 2.5 computers away just in parts. And I've got all my old machines maxed out, RAM out the wazoo, all that good stuff, right? Because it turns out machines that are like 10 years old are really cheap to just max out.
That's what I was going to say earlier. You should specify you threw, 2.5 computers from early 2000 away, because we all know that's, you know, not new hardware.
Well, let's see here. That's one of them was a Pentium 4, I'm wanting to say.
See, that's not terrible. I thought, yeah, you know, you could be throwing away AT keyboards and, you know, EDO RAM and...
Oh, I've got some of that that's going in the trash.
No, get the gold out of it.
Oh, jeez. I'm not doing gold extraction in my kitchen. I like having my teeth, thank you.
It's goddamn dangerous, dude.
Oh, yeah, it's super
dangerous.
If
you get the gold, you can replace your teeth with it.
Gold and
you know
teeth.
What? I'll just go buy gold if I really want it.
Yeah, it's all that sulfuric acid. Tasty.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be great out in the backyard, little brick furnace and the sulfuric acid.
Breathe,
oh, no,
deep,
you
kids.
Do reverse electrolyte.
Just wave at your neighbors in a hazmat suit.
You know what, Swap? I'll tell you what. Next week, I'll let you do Digital Dojo, and you can tell us how to get gold out of old computer parts.
Oh, I have no idea how to do that.
All right, you need 3 acids, boric acid, sulfuric acid, a face mask, some copper, a glass dish, and a truck battery.
And that's
some
money to
how
pay
you
off
make
the...
methamphetamines.
Yeah, I was going to say, and some money to pay off the cops when they show up for you making meth.
No, it's totally different to making meth. You don't use any Sudafed.
You expect the average patrol guy to know that.
Yeah, right?
You've got to have understanding neighbors. That's a big part of it.
Well, I'm boned. But yeah, I've done fairly well with getting rid of the old hardware and getting what I'm keeping really in good shape. Actually, I'm kind of surprised at how well some of these older machines are really running. So that's nice. But something I kept coming across was stacks and stacks of shit like zip disks and other weird ass old hardware that like nobody uses anymore.
But isn't it fun to come across it? Like just the other day, I was on TeamSpeak with you guys, and I found this old floppy disk, and I was like, "What the hell is on this?" I like it because it's a mystery.
So, anyways, I was thinking, you know, from a security perspective, if you're using hardware that nobody else has, it's kind of like encryption in that they can't read it. Yeah. If you think about it, back around the 90s, between when the floppy disk was declared too small, but before, you know, recordable CDs got cheap enough that those became the standard, like, I think iOmega invented half of them. All of these alternative, you know, storage devices kind of came out. Zip disks and click disks and the 720 floppy disk and...
Yes,
nobody
drives.
Else knows what the hell I'm talking about at all, do you?
No, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Dude, yeah. Dude, my computer that I'm on right now still has a zip drive in it.
Nice.
And a 3.5-inch. Because, yeah. You know why? Because that shit comes up every once in a while. Like I said, you find a random disk, you're like, hey, I want to know what's on this.
Yeah. Well, this machine doesn't have a floppy drive, but I think I've got a USB one floating around here somewhere.
Well, it's like
so we dish. All know how to take control of Saad's computer now.
Use the boot disk. God, I haven't done one of those in a long time either. But if you think about it, how many people who haven't been doing this forever, like if you grab your average college kid today with, you know, their MacBook from Starbucks and hand them a zip drive, do you think they're going to have any fucking clue what the thing even is?
Yeah.
And we are, what, 7 minutes in and I am already cursing. Fantastic. So, I mean, seriously, most people are not going to know what this thing is. And even if they do, like, zip drive. I had one of those when I was in high school. You know, it's like, they don't have it anymore, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I'm sure I've got the zip drive around here somewhere, but I don't know where it is. So, but if you think about it, if you can get your hands on some of this older media,
mm-hmm.
You could use this as a means to transmit sensitive information, whereas if somebody steals it, worst case scenario, they got to get on eBay to find a drive that'll read it and kind of hope it works when it shows up, you know?
Absolutely.
And you know, go ahead.
Well, you know, even better is, you know, a guy could even rig something up so they could just, like, you know, record something onto a cassette tape and send that. You know, there's all kinds of crazy things people could come up with.
Oh, sure.
So, like, you know, even better than just using old media, come up with using old media in ways that it wasn't intended to be used.
Yeah, I could certainly see that. I was actually thinking, you know, along these same lines, see if you get your hands on some 5 1/4 floppies. And I know how hard these things are to find because I was working on some of my old Commodores and getting blank disks, 5 1/4 floppies that work.
I actually have
really?
About 5 or 6 of those still in the cellophane wrapping.
I was going to say, I have a box of, I don't know what they come in, like 10, that's still wrapped brand new in the cellophane, probably with the price sticker still on it.
Hang on to them, man, because you can put those
I have,
up on
because
eBay
it's
for bang.
Nostalgia. They're brand new.
Well, I did the same thing yesterday, Morps. Went through everything, but some of the stuff I threw out was classic stuff, like Windows ME, still fully wrapped in its original packaging.
Well, that was a quality
that
operating
you don't throw
system
away. That
right
you
there.
Burn.
Just because it's ME. We actually have at work a Windows 95. I want to say it's on 3.5-inch. Yeah, 3.5-inch floppies, brand new in the cellophane that we hide around, you know, like in each other's desks.
Wow.
That's awesome. Yeah.
That's fun. That's just a quest for whenever somebody has to fix the one machine that still runs it. You know, we've hidden clues in the floppy disks around the office building. Hope the janitor hasn't beaten you to it. You know, but I also that kind of got me thinking, you know, if you keep your really secure data on something like, say, a Commodore 64 and the 5 1/4 floppies, somebody running Metasploit or getting a virus on your machine is going to have to work pretty damned hard to, you know, it's like, I don't think a virus will actually run on the Commodore just for space concerns.
Yeah.
It's like, well, you know, I've gotten one on the internet, but most people don't. So It was a bit of a chore to do it, too. I'm pretty sure its network adapter has more horsepower than, you know, the Commodore. But, yeah, I've not seen the Metasploit module to exploit the Commodore yet, so...
yet.
That... yet. Well, you see, know, once you challenge somebody...
Everybody's going to take your advice. They're all going to go to the Commodore, and, like, 2 days later, like, not even, it's going to be out.
Oh, yeah, no, if it was worth doing, you know they'd do it.
Yeah.
and I could see, I could see somebody telling H.D. Moore, it's like, yeah, they challenge you to write a Metasploit module for the Commodore. I think he would do it just to do
it's
it. I
mean,
just
like,
you know, somebody challenged yeah. him. But
absolutely.
You know, I kind of think about the idea of using zip disks and the 5 1/4s, and you know, you kind of got to consider that the risk of media failure on something 15 to 20 years old is rather high.
This is a good point.
So yeah. I'm not sure that keeping your taxes on the Commodore are the best idea. But, you know, I kind of like the idea of using the Commodore tape drive and getting new cassettes, because you can still get those.
For now.
But, yeah, for now. But, you know, this kind of got me thinking that the whole reason the idea of using something like a zip disk is kind of secure is because nobody can read the damned thing. Well, you can do that today with something new. Most USB drives are extraordinarily easy to mod. Their cases come across easy, you know, come open easily, and they're just 4 pins, 2 for power, 2 for data. It's a USB line, right? So, you know, you could get creative here and say swap the USB connector for something oddball. My first thought was a 4-prong power jack, but, you know, if you spend some time in Radio Shack, I'm sure you can find some kind of an oddball connector that nobody's using for, well, anything, really. And so if you get yourself a soldering iron, crack open a flash drive and solder the USB connectors to something not USB, and then cover the whole damn thing in JB Weld so that, you know, you're not scraping it down to solder to the pins, you know what I mean?
Right.
And then, of course, on, you know, for everyone that's authorized to use it, they've got the matching USB cable that you've got the other end of that connector on that then just turns it back into USB. You know, if like you're, you know, we use these 4 banana plugs and you have to know the order to get them in, otherwise, you know, you fry the drive, then, you know, especially if like you can make it so the connector plugs it in wrong and that's it, the flash drive is done. That would actually be a very secure hardware solution, because if somebody doesn't know how to make that adapter and you've covered the thing in epoxy, so they can't exactly get in and see how you wired it up. And that's it. That's done. And you can still encrypt the drive just to, you know, feel extra safe.
Yeah, that's actually a really cool idea. It's kind of like security by obscurity a little bit.
Well,
there.
It's, I mean, that's exactly what it is.
The data is there, open, you know, available, but you kind of still have to know where it is and how to get to it. Yeah,
it's kind of like stenography, right? I mean, if you don't know the data is there, if you find in somebody's laptop bag something with like 3 RCA connectors on it and it covered in epoxy, and your first thought would not be flash drive, right?
Yeah.
No, not at all.
Now it is.
But, you know, some eyeball thing and it's like this little weird ass security dongle looking thing, or even better, put the flash drive in something that doesn't look like a flash drive, right? Go get creative. Find some Star Trek props on eBay. And, you know, somebody steals it, they're not going to know what it is. They're not going to know what's in it. So even if you haven't encrypted the data on the drive, which you should probably do anyways if it's secure, but if you haven't and they don't know that it's a flash drive, they're just going to be like, you know, whatever. So, and I know you can buy the flash drives that, you know, goofy little ship, the dog that humps the USB port or whatever, but you know, if you make your own and your company kind of makes a standard, or just you and your group makes a standard of how these things should work so that only somebody in the know knows how to wire them up, I mean, that'd be fairly good way of kind of obscuring your traveling data.
Absolutely.
Yeah, good point.
If nothing else, it's a fun concept, and you can think of how many things you could hide a flash drive in that you can still make the little USB adapter for the other end so you can still get your stuff in and out of it.
Yeah, it really makes me want to go find some weird-ass just oddball connector that, you know, no one's ever seen before. But yep, that's my thumb drive.
Well, that's well how you get your hands on a 3D printer, you could make your own connectors.
Yeah, no, now that's what I was actually thinking as far as, like, if you had a company to want to make their standard for this, you know, just take your USB port and make your custom adapter, maybe build it into the front of your cases, because all you need is a drill and the adapter and know how it's wired it up. And of course, you could even, you know, you could even take the wiring and kind of hide that as what, trade secret or whatever, and just like make your company logo be the plug or something like that. That way, you know, if you don't know what it is, you don't know what it is. Or if you do know what it is, how the hell do you wire this thing up? Well, you get it wrong, it's done, right? So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, if you know what you're doing with the multimeter, you might be able to figure out which pins are which, but you still have a pretty good risk of trashing the drive while you're doing it.
You don't
it.
Even need them. All you need is a multimeter with a continuity check. It's not difficult.
For what? I guess for the ground pins, yeah. But no, I'm assuming you covered the other end of it in epoxy, so you can't tell what's what on the flash drive.
You can dissolve epoxy. The trick is try not to dissolve enough that you destroy the PCB.
Well, still, you're making it really fucking hard.
Still possible.
How much wire would you be able to have between the actual connectors and the PC for it to still be workable?
Geez, what's the limit on a USB cable? It's like 15 meters or something
stupid
like that.
It's a lot, dude, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, like, what if a guy, like, you could easily do something, even just, like, have some nails in the wall that you hang stuff on, and just, like, manually attach wires to that to get a connection.
Oh, jeez.
You could have it hidden inside, you could have it hidden inside your
wow.
wall.
Get out
Nobody
the
would ever know.
That's sweet. Like, I connect the red wire to this nail, and then the black wire is the nail that's across the room, and all those trace back to the thumb drive.
I just like the concept of you move the picture on the wall out of the way and hook up these wires to these nails, and that's kind of a fun idea. I like that.
That is. That's really cool, actually.
And that's Hollywood level shit right there.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, hide flash drives and things. Just so, you know, somebody goes to a flea market and finds flash drives embedded in dolls or whatever. It's, you know, I like the concept. All right, let's go ahead and move on to current events here. First one up is from thenextweb.com. Google sent an email to Blogger users today warning them that their sites will be removed at the end of the month if they do not remove all adverts and links to external sites hosting adult content. Blogger's current policy allows users to publish adult images and videos that contain nudity and sexual activity, provided they categorize their blog appropriately in the settings panel. Google does not allow users to make money from adult content, however, with adverts or links pointing to commercial porn sites. The email sent to Blogger admins today states that the company's content policy will be updated on June 30th to strictly prohibit the monetization of all adult content. After June 30th, 2013, we'll begin enforcing this policy and will remove blogs which are adult in nature and are displaying advertisements to adult websites, the email reads. The wording doesn't appear to differ from Blogger's current content policy, but shows that Google is now prepared to take down any and all blogs which are adult in nature and displaying adverts or links for adult sites. So, it sounds to me like somebody at Google's figured out that they're hosting porn through Blogger and is looking for a way to take it down.
Well, it's more of not just hosting porn. It's you can't do adult content and have ads for other adult content.
Well, it almost sounds to me like you can have porn, just you can't make any money from it.
No, you can't make money from adult.
A different, I thought it's from a different provider, right? External.
Yeah,
but you can still use like Google AdWords.
I'm sure that's exactly what it is.
You can make money, you just can't, you know, make it
just
from
we
someone
have to
else.
Control it. Yeah,
but exactly. You know, to be fair, it is a free service, isn't it?
Oh yeah, no,
like,
I'm
these
not saying they don't have the right to
anything.
Do it. I just think it's funny.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because at least from this line, yeah, it's you can still have adult content. You just can only have non-adult ads.
Wait a
minute. Oh, great. So an incest story with My Little Pony advertising.
I'm just, it's like, you know, here's your porn and here's your ad for a baby monitor. Wait a minute.
Oh!
He said non-adult ads, so I'm just thinking like toys, yeah, babies. I was like, wait a minute.
That's gonna end. End badly. That's like premonition.
Oh, wow. It's Lore's show all over again. Watch how awkward we get.
no, I'm sorry.
I just heard that one.
I don't know. I think it's comical that they're going to be cracking down on this. I don't know how much of Blogger is porn. I mean, I guess since they allowed it, it's probably a lot more than you'd think.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never actually seen any Blogger porn. Maybe I should go check out Blogger. There might be a lot of porn over there.
Yeah, you get like 3 days before they start deleting it, dude.
And Swap's gone for the rest of the show.
Swap's gone, and we just hear this furious clicking.
You hope that's clicking.
You know what? I'm just going to declare Rocket Snail. This next one up is from Sophos.com. Norwegian-based Opera, the makers of one of the most popular browsers outside of the Big Four, has announced a scary-sounding network intrusion. The official story is still somewhat unclear, but here's a relevant paragraph from Opera's official mea culpa document on June 19th. So this part is the actual announcement from Opera. On June 19th, we uncovered, halted, and contained a targeted attack on our internal network infrastructure. Our systems have been cleaned, and there is no evidence of any user data being compromised. We are working with relevant authorities to investigate its source and any potential further extent. Skipping ahead a bit to the important parts. It is possible that a few thousand Windows users who were using Opera between 1 and 1:36 UTC on June 19th may have automatically received and installed malicious software. So in other words, they broke into Opera, they got in to their code distribution center, they stole a code signing certificate, and uploaded malware into Opera's automatic updating system.
Ouch.
Wow.
So Sophos reaches the conclusion that the network is breached, a code signing key was stolen, malware has been signed with it and circulated, at least one infected file was posted on an Opera server, that file may have been downloaded or installed by Opera itself, and cleanup and remediation is done at Opera. Now here's the fun part. How many people got this automatic update? Now, apparently the malware installed that is installed by it was is pretty widely detected by most of the antivirus tools, and Opera's said it was only a 30-minute exposure, but that's probably enough to get a lot of machines.
Oh, yeah. Just think how many machines, you know, are going through in a day. And, you know, half an hour in a day is still a pretty large percentage of that.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, how many people have Opera installed? Maybe they don't use it all the time, but maybe, like, you know, they've just got it installed because they tried it once or something. Or if they're a web developer and so they've got it. Or
because it's an old and expired code signing certificate, why is that still valid to push software?
Because it obviously wasn't expired.
Yeah.
They're just tacking old and expired on there so people don't panic so much. It must have been valid because they signed code with it. And the auto update took it. So old and expired or not, it was still valid enough to work.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, heads up, if you've got Opera on your machine, or like maybe if you've got a school that has it included in their standard images because they like to include all the browsers or something, because I've seen lab machines that, you know, have all three installed. Well, I guess it'd be four now, wouldn't it? But, well, anyways, you know, Opera used to be a pretty serious contender, and I know a lot of people still use it. So, yeah, you might double-check your systems if you've got it.
You know what this makes me think of is this sysadmin that, you know, like, detected it. I wonder how they detected it. And, you know, because it sounded like it was early in the morning, wasn't it?
UTC or whatever. So it would have been during the day, stateside.
Oh, okay. But I was just thinking, you know, like, I was thinking it was like middle of the night. You're the one you know, sysadmin on call or something, sitting there hanging out, and then all of a sudden these freaking warnings go off, and you're like, oh, shit.
The red telephone starts ringing.
Yeah. Always think of that guy. Like, what
quick, somebody call Batman! I mean, you know. red telephone, you know, come on. Under the
glass
case. Who uses
red telephones anymore?
Hey, if I had, like, a dude who had to sit around and wait for one call, I'd totally give him a big, giant red telephone. And have the phone that actually works a couple rooms down. Yeah.
Just, if this phone rings, don't answer it. Why? Because it's a bomb. Wait, what?
Ring, ring.
Yep,
call
see,
it
don't
every
answer
day.
That. All right, next story up. This one's from bbc.co.uk. I believe RU sent me this one. A project to recreate a pioneering UK 1940s computer has hit a significant milestone as the first working parts of the restored machine are demonstrated. Key elements of the restored Electronic Delay Storage Automatic Calculator, or EDSAC, were unveiled on Wednesday. They were shown off at a Bletchley Park event marking the 100th anniversary of the birth of EDSAC's designer, Sir Morris Wilkes, who died in 2010. EDSAC's recreation project began in 2011 and should be completed by 2015. EDSAC, widely accepted to be the first practical general-purpose computer, first ran in May 1949. It was designed to do computational work for scientists at the University of Cambridge. Its design was copied for the Leo, the world's first computer to be used in business. Recreation of the original machine has been tough, as relatively few of EDSAC's design documents from the 1940s have survived. Early work on the project has gone into scrutinizing pictures of the original to work out which bits go where and what they might do.
Wow.
This thing was built in the 40s and we've already forgotten how to remake one.
I just pictured this room full of monkeys with, like, a bunch of transistors and stuff like that, like, randomly plugging them into holes.
This just makes the future so much brighter when nobody understands where anything works.
Well, it gets better. This has been a mammoth task, as the EDSAC is built up of 3,000 valves spread across 140 separate shelves. Once complete, the machine will occupy 215 square feet space. The parts demonstrated at Bletchley include one element which handles basic mathematical operations as well as internal clocks that help to keep the data coordinated as it passes through the machine and in and out of memory. Attending the event was the guy's son, Anthony. Blah, blah, blah. The guy who designed it was great. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Okay. So think about this thing for a minute. 3,000 vacuum tubes across 100 some odd shelves.
That's why no one knows how to fix it or how it works. Wow. No one remembers how to use tubes.
And they can't find the original notes on building the thing. I'm wondering, what are they doing to even get... I don't think they even make tubes much anymore.
Probably have to employ someone to make them again.
Either that or they're like raiding museums when somebody's not looking. I mean, I know that you can still get tube amps and stuff out there, but, I mean, they're really expensive.
You know, there's got to be something out there that they'd be able to adapt for use.
I'm sure they've got a manufacturer on board helping them out. I mean, they'd have to. But still, I just love that description of which bits go where and what they do. that's kind of like you think somebody could just... It's like, well, we can't figure out what this was supposed to be, but we can design around it because we know how a computer works these days. So, I don't know. That's just interesting to me that they don't know how to build the damned thing anymore. All right, next one up. This one is from The Age Online. Games producer Blizzard has posted a warning on the official World of Warcraft website, stating that in the last few days have seen hackers targeting gamer accounts, both actual game accounts and the iPhone and Android apps, which provide the users with access to the Warcraft arsenal, are affected. The apps provide access to the in-game auction house to buy and sell game objects. Okay, so it's not the Authenticator app, it's the auction house apps, which I didn't know existed because I haven't played World of Warcraft in years. According to Blizzard, there's been a large number of recent violations of accounts which do not enjoy the added security provided by Authenticator. The Authenticator generates a specific... Okay, we all know what Authenticator does. Yeah, you can get it as an app. So Blizzard does not reveal exactly how many accounts have been compromised. The company says that it is in the process of informing account holders whose accounts show signs of unauthorized access. As a result of the attacks, it has temporarily blocked access to the World of Warcraft auction house. So this is severe enough that Blizzard actually shut down the WoW auction house, so I'm sure nerds everywhere are like losing their shit. Blizzard has promised to restore stolen in-game items and gold to hacked accounts. The motivation for the hacks appears to be provided by the link between the game's virtual currency and real money. It is currently possible to buy 100,000 of World of Warcraft gold on eBay for about 75 euros. The game's producer terms state that it does not recognize such trades, but the level of demand means that it is powerless to stop them. Rare pets, for example, often fetch hundreds of euros on eBay. And that sentence made me sad.
Yep.
So, but nobody else cares that WoW accounts are getting popped?
Not really.
No. Yeah.
It needs to happen more.
Well, yeah. Considering World of Warcraft, most World of Warcraft accounts have better security than most banks. They're still getting popped left and right.
The only thing I was thinking as you were reading was, and suddenly 1,000 nerd voices cried out, and then were suddenly silenced.
No!
Oh, man.
Wow. Where is it? I gotta find the...
That's the wrong one.
Yeah, I hit the wrong one first.
It almost makes sense, though, because, like, you know, okay, so, like, let's say you want to hack something to make some money. Yeah, you could go after, like, something where there's a lot of money, but generally these types of places, you're gonna be going to jail. But, you know, like, I've never heard of anybody going to jail for hacking a WoW account. So, you know, like, it's just, you know, you report that to the... Who do you even report that sort of thing to? And, like, are they even going to care? It's a game account. Like, it's not going to be investigated by any, like, government authority or anything like that.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, and, you know, anything you get off there can be worth, like you said, hundreds and hundreds of dollars. You know, it's similar to how you're seeing all these people getting hacked or bitcoins and stuff like that, because it's one of those areas where you're not prosecuted.
Well, it's, you know, and the thing is that got me, one of the things that I was thinking about this was the story we did last week of how the government is claiming now that the IRS should be investigating World of Warcraft transactions and Second Life and Bitcoin for taxation. And now Blizzard is shutting stuff down because they're getting hacked so much. So I kind of wonder if people are starting to pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess at this point you'd report it to the IRS so they don't tax the crap out of you for your quote-unquote capital gains.
Yeah.
Like, so we see that your World of Warcraft account has suddenly lost several rare pets to somebody named Xbox 360 YOLO. And...
Why do you keep using your Xbox Live name, dude, on the show?
Yeah, that's not cool.
He wants people to add him so he's got somebody to swagger with.
Yeah, I'm getting tired of my only friend being Tom. Oh, wait, that's a MySpace joke. I don't actually have an Xbox 360, so I don't know the humor. I'm part of the PC gaming master race. I really don't have a modern console. Let's see. I lost my place. I actually lost my place.
Hate mail now.
What'd you say, are you?
I can see the hate mail now. Dear Morphs, about what you said about console owners.
Yeah, they're dirty console peasants.
Oh.
It's funny because it's true.
All right. Next one up is from Ars Technica. A week ago, Ars reported that Kim.com publicly accused LeaseWeb, a Dutch hosting company, of suddenly deleting all of Mega Upload's servers. The founder of Mega Upload continues to fight legal battles worldwide concerning the shuttering of his file-sharing site, and he wrote on Twitter that all user data and critical evidence for our defense was destroyed without warning. LeaseWeb, for its part, defended its actions. On Wednesday, TorrentFreak published a new email from .com's attorney to LeaseWeb, showing that Mega Upload did request preservation of all of its data. Mega Upload continues to request that LeastWeb preserve any and all information, documentation, and data related to Mega Upload, as destruction by LeastWeb would appear to be in violation of, amongst many other things, the applicable civil litigation data preservation rules, and would interfere with evidence in a criminal matter, all of which may be subject or may subject LeastWeb to varying degrees of liability. Ira Rothkin.com's counsel wrote, The passage appeared in an email to LeastWeb's lawyer, A.H. Brom de Haas van Dorser.
What a
name.
That
dude has like a $50,000 name right there. it's like that. You had to go to a doctor and have that name installed in March 2012. It's like, I need an extra RAM, and I need some more RAM in my brain just to hold that. Torn Freak was also linked to a letter from the Electronic Frontier Foundation to De Haas van Dorser, dated on April 2012. The Dutch company, for its part, responded to .com's new accusation on Wednesday. However, LeastWeb did not immediately respond to our request for further comments. We have done everything from day one to try to keep keep that data safe. It was our expectation that the U.S. federal court in Virginia was going to come back with a ruling about customer data that would enable us to reconnect the servers and reconnect our users with their data, .com told ours. LeastWeb has destroyed that hope that we would be able to do that. I'm having a hard time reading some of this. He estimated the data loss at about 40% of all of Mega Upload's data, at least 40 petabytes. Rothkin's letter details that an Australian company, Instra, even offered to purchase the servers or the data on Mega Upload's behalf. LeastWeb put up so many hurdles they wouldn't even engage in negotiations, Rothkin told ours. LeastWeb was deaf to any negotiations. Their so-called desires to deal with Mega Upload were illusionary. In response to the accusations, Alex DeJode, LeastWeb's senior regulatory counsel, wrote, LeastWeb BV is aware of the email that Mega Upload refers to and points out that the mentioned email does not change our side of the story or the fact that LeastWeb has exerted every reasonable and lawful effort to keep the Mega Upload data alive. Mega Upload had 630 rented, dedicated servers with LeastWeb BV. For clarity, these servers were not owned by Mega Upload. They were owned or leased by LeastWeb BV. For almost a year, these servers were being stored and preserved by LeastWeb at its own costs. The Mega Upload request was part of a larger discussion while the servers were still racked. On March 29th, 2012, the servers were stored and preserved. The initial Mega Upload request predates this. Therefore, I see no discrepancy between our statement and the facts. Okay, so LeastWeb is pretty much saying they haven't been paid for these servers for a year. And 630 servers is kind of a lot. So I can kind of see their point of they're not making money on these servers. They need to get them back into play.
Oh, absolutely.
So I can kind of see their point, but I don't know. The Mega Upload situation is a bit unique.
Well, you know, really, like if they weren't getting money, then they have no reason to be holding on to the servers. But, you know, well, like
there are legal requirements for and you know, that could be considered evidence destruction.
Right, but if it was evidence, the police would have gone in and gathered it as evidence, not left it in their sight for over a year.
That's true.
So, like, you know, it probably should have been evidence, but they didn't do that because, of course, the whole arrest was kind of flaky to begin with. So, like, you know, they held on to it for a year without getting any money, and that's a hell of a lot longer than most people would do.
That's true. That's true. And, you know, I mean, the thing is, I kind of wonder... I guess you can come at it from the conspiracy angle of there was data they needed for the defense on there, and it disappeared.
Right.
So, I don't know. The whole Mega Upload thing is so squirrely from both sides.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I don't know. I think they lost out on... I mean, they could have made some serious money off of it. Sure, you know, they were losing money. No one was paying for the service for a year. But if that other Instra company wanted to... you know, pay their hosting fees or whatever, dude, you could have tacked on, you know, how many extra charges or whatever. They could have made a whole bunch of money if they had to done that and let that other company, you know, pay the hosting fees on Mega Upload's behalf. I don't know. I like the conspiracy theory part, like you were saying. You know, data for their defense was on there, and someone from the U.S. government got there before him and said, "You need to delete this data, or else."
Well, at this point, I think probably the best thing that would happen to all the Mega Upload data, because of the way it's all been jerked around, it'd be nice if people who had uploaded stuff could get their data back. But really, at this point, I'd rather actually see it all deleted. Because let's say the Mega Upload thing goes the quote-unquote wrong way, right? Like the copyright guys win, they shoot Kim.com in the head, and, you know, parade his head through the streets of New York or whatever. I don't know where they would actually do that. But, you know, let's say the copyright guys win. And all that data gets confiscated by the copyright guys. You think they're not going to mine that and prosecute the hell out of everyone they can identify?
That's a good point.
So I would kind of rather see it all just destroyed at this point, because at least then nobody gets to abuse it, you know?
Yeah, and you know it's not tainted in any way.
But, I guess it kind of sucks if you had really critical stuff on Mega Upload and we're still hoping to get it back.
Hopefully yours is on the other 60% that wasn't deleted right then.
Yeah. I think at this point, though, you kind of have to know you're not getting it back.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious.
If you haven't figured that out, you're delusional.
Sorry, are you? All your cat pictures you put up there are gone now.
I know, man. I resigned my factor. I've lost all that. It's only because I put them up there for you to download them, dude. You said you wanted them.
Well, cat pictures are pretty cool.
Yeah, he had to work on that collage.
Yeah.
Okay. Next one. Next one up is from Forbes.com. Directly following last month's Bitcoin 2013 conference event in San Jose, California. Almost said San Jose. I don't know. I know how to read. Why did I do that? San Jose, California, that brought decent revenue into the state. California's Department of Financial Institutions. Oh, I guess I should point out, and Forbes does too, the person who wrote this works for the Bitcoin Foundation. California's Department of Financial Institutions decided to issue a cease and desist warning to conference organizer Bitcoin Foundation for allegedly engaging in the business of monetary transmission without a license or proper authorization. If found to be in violation of the California Financial Code, penalties can be severe as ranging from $1,000 to $2,500 per violation per day, plus criminal prosecution, which could result in fines and/or imprisonment. Additionally, as it is a felony it is a felony violation of federal law, which that's kind of what the word felony means, jackass, to engage in the business of monetary transmission without the appropriate state license or failure to register with the U.S. Treasury Department. Convictions under the federal statute are punishable by up to 5 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. The Bitcoin Foundation is a nonprofit corporation registered in Washington, D.C. with a mailing address in Seattle, Washington. As a nonprofit, its mission is to standardize and promote the open source Bitcoin protocol, and it receives generous support from individuals and corporations to advance these objectives. The foundation also boasts significant international membership. One activity that the foundation does not engage in is the owning, controlling, or conducting of monetary transmission business. So, yeah, pretty much this is a foundation that tries to work for Bitcoin adoption. And California sent them a cease and desist saying that they were selling Bitcoins. It's rough to read the article because the guy who wrote it is...
I had seen articles on this before, and I didn't really understand it. Either.
So are they actually selling Bitcoins?
No. What it is the foundation supports other... They give financial support to Bitcoin companies that are trying to start up technology development, that kind of thing. I think they hold a lot of... you know, they're sort of like some of the open source foundations. They hold a lot of the IP, and they hold a lot of the... you know, they do backing for projects and that kind of thing.
Gotcha. They don't actually run. They're not like Mt. Gox or anything.
Okay.
So
he's saying that cease and desist letter is just bullshit.
Well, I think what's happening is government is starting to get scared of Bitcoin, so they're taking the shotgun approach and just trying to shut down anything related to it.
No, it's totally true, though, because I keep seeing that all over the place with people's... Actually, just recently, exchange got shut down up here in Canada, LibertyBit. And, all they had to do was shut down their bank account. And, they didn't even have to take the money. They just had to put the bank account on hold. The main account that where all of this stuff is going through all of a sudden is no longer functioning. That site is no longer functioning. And people will never recover from that sort of lack of faith, you know. So that killed them. All they had to do was put a freeze on their bank account. Easy.
Yeah. So, anyways, it's interesting, and I'm not really that interested in this particular case because it is comical, but I'm more interested in the general trend because, like I said, I think they're trying to kill anything related to Bitcoin. And this follows my theory that I had a while back that they're not going to be able to shut down Bitcoin itself because it's an internet protocol and the people trying to shut it down don't really understand things like that. So they're going to just shut down anything related to it, just make it impossible to use.
Right. Yeah. And like I said, you had talked about that before. And the government wanting their slice of it, you know.
Yeah, taxing exactly.
It, which we've seen they're starting to want to do also.
Well, that and they can't print more bitcoins at will.
Yeah.
So, you can't do quantitative easing on bitcoins. With Bitcoin, it's real debt. So, it's a real current. Well, it's not real. Bob, help me out here. I'm floundering. And you love Bitcoin. So
it has value because people give it value. Same thing as every other... Like every other currency out there. There's like one or two countries now that actually have it backed by something real.
It's just harder to make than a piece of paper.
Yeah. Well, it had real value. That the word value is what I was missing there.
Yeah. And
I wasn't doing a good job of explaining it. So, the thing with the U.S. dollar is they can do quantitative easing whenever they want, and that makes it easier to repay loans. That's why they do it. You devalue the currency. Well, the government can't devalue Bitcoin. I think that's why they're wanting people to not use it, is because they can't manipulate it to make it easier or harder to do things. And you can argue about the validity of them being able to manipulate the monetary system. There are some people who think that that's a fantastic way to do things. So I'm not picking a side there. I'm just, the value of the dollar is arbitrary because the government can issue more or less of it. I don't think it's quite as arbitrary as like what China does, where they actually set the rates. But there's an argument there, whereas they have no arbitrary control over Bitcoin. But I think that's why it scares them. Okay, next one up. This one's from the bbc.co.uk, and I believe RU sent me this one as well. Jake Davis, 20, was convicted of computer hacking for his role in the notorious group Lulzsec. He cannot contact anyone who associates themselves with the wider anonymous hacker collective, or hacktivist collective. He told the BBC he plans to release a prison diary and to write a film about the internet. Davis returned to Twitter on June 22nd after finishing his 37-day term at Felthelm Young Offender Institution. During that time, he penned what he was there for 37 days. And so now he's got his diary, what he described as a nerdy diary written using pen and paper, which he hopes to publish online once it has been subjected to legal checks. So I have to make sure he can actually publish it.
He only did 37 days of a 2-year sentence.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Dear diary, day 2. I'm sick of being raped. I'm going to tell on everybody. I need to get out of here.
Well, check out some of the provisions of his probation. He is forbidden from creating encrypted files, securely wiping any data, or deleting his internet history.
Huh. That's interesting.
Nope, you can't hide those porn sites you were going to. Wonder if he's even allowed to use private mode on Firefox. In June of 2012, he pleaded guilty to being part of the group Lulzsec, an offset of Anonymous, famed for attacking several high-profile sites, including Sony Pictures and the UK's Serious Organized Crime Agency. Shortly after being released, he tweeted 654 days on curfew and 37 days in Feldheim. Up next, another 365 days on license, parole, and 1,825 days of intense monitoring. Free, though. Yeah, he's real free there, isn't he? He has been sentenced to 24 months, but he has been wearing an electronic tag for 21 months, with counted against his term. I see what they did. Because they tagged him early on and it took him that long to get a sentence, they pretty much counted his tags, or the time he was wearing the electronic tag, as time served.
Right.
So.
I guess you gotta cash in on it somehow. Everyone's breaking movie deals now.
At least that's what they're calling it.
Still, though, can't wipe data or delete his internet history, or from not allowed to create an encrypted file, and he's not allowed to talk to somebody from Anonymous. How would they know?
Because it is anonymous. I bet you they have monitoring software on
his computer. What if his computer accidentally auto-runs a program that wipes it? Is he still arrested?
I don't know. It's one of those things that's really hard. I guess, that's probably why they don't want him wiping his data or his internet history or encrypting anything, is because their monitoring software probably can't work with it.
Yeah.
So.
It's interesting, though, because didn't they used to be like, you weren't allowed to touch a computer or a phone for
X amount of years.
Yeah, apparently. That's kind of interesting to see that shift. Like, okay, you can use a computer, but you can't delete your internet history, blah, blah, no encrypted files and all that. Well, so that's kind of
different. It's getting to the point you can only use a computer that has, 2 gig of RAM, can't have a dedicated graphics card with any horsepower, just must be an onboard, motherboard built card. That's where I could see it going, man.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If you think about it, though, I mean, everything's got microprocessors, if nothing else, in them. I mean, they say you can't use a computer, period. That means you probably can't use a cell phone. You probably can't use a modern car. You probably can't use your air conditioner.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah. If they just restrict the sort of computing power he's allowed to use, that's where it's going to go in the future.
You're allowed to use a computer. Here's your Commodore 64.
Pretty much, man.
And you know what? I'd almost be okay with that.
Because you can do just as much with that as you can if you're clever enough. I know.
There was an article. I don't know that I covered it on Decking or not, but apparently there was a kid who that was the only computer he had was a Commodore 64, but he was able to clone a bunch of the software he saw on his Windows computers at school on the Commodore, and most of them apparently ran fairly well.
Wasn't that Japanese kid?
I don't remember.
Remember you talking about the story? And it was actually quite successful.
Yeah, no, he went on to be a really good programmer because he learned how to do all this stuff on the Commodore. So, I kind of wonder if maybe that's what you ought to do is, when you start your kids off, don't give them the full computer with the internet. Here's your Atari.
Figure out how to get it on the internet.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. Well, it would stop some of the early mistakes that people make with computers, Oh, I need this codec to watch this video. Click virus. Fuck. how many people's computers have you fixed? It's like, do you really need so many search engine tabs at the... Yeah.
I use all those.
We're just going to go ahead and delete Internet Explorer. But how will I get on the internet?
Use Firefox.
The circle with the red stuff on it, or Google Chrome. Yeah, I logged into Google Chrome at work, and now I have all my porn history and shit at work. How do I stop that?
Okay, you want to use porn mode. I mean, privacy mode. Oh, come on. You all know that's exactly what the damn thing's for.
It's for buying gifts.
Don't log in at work on your own personal fucking shit.
Don't even log into Chrome. Why would anybody do that?
I know. But that was one of the questions I had last week. Yeah, you know about computers and stuff? Like, I logged into Chrome at work, and now my personal history's there. There's a lot of hardcore porn sites there that I've got saved. And yeah.
And this is the part where you explain why admitting to looking at porn is still not considered socially acceptable, no matter how much everyone knows.
I can't help you, sorry. Talk to your admin at work.
Go turn yourself in.
Yeah, dude, that's pretty much it. I've gotten to the point, like, until I get the ballistic Kevlar face armor, I'm not going anywhere near computers for face palming. It's really starting to damage me.
Like, well, how'd you break your wrist?
Twice last week I had the question, you know computers, how do I get porn off my work computer?
Don't look at porn on your work computer would be a good start.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Wow. All right, let's do my last, our good old-fashioned mind bender here. This one's from Boing Boing. Rich Lee, a grinder, someone who has used surgical enhancements and or modifications, someone who has had surgical enhancements and or modifications conducted upon their person, implanted a magnet in his ear that he can use as a speaker. He wears a coil on a necklace that he can use to transmit to it, and he was inspired by an Instructable, which you can find the link fairly easily, and is now branching out to some serious experimentation. From the guy's own write-up, listening to music is nice and probably the most obvious answer, but I intend to do some very creative things with it. The implant itself is completely undetectable to the naked eye. The device and the coil necklace are easily concealable under my shirt so that nobody can really see it. I can see myself using it with the GPS on my smartphone to navigate city streets on foot. I plan on hooking it up to a directional mic of some sort, possibly disguised as a shirt button or something, so I can hear conversations across the room. Having a mic hooked up to it and routed through my phone would be handy. You could use a simple voice stress analysis app to detect when people might be lying to you. Not to say that it is a hard science, but I'm pretty sure this could come in handy at the poker table or to pre-screen business clients. I have a contact mic that allows you to hear through walls. This might be my next implant, actually. He also wants to hook it up to an ultrasonic range finder to and learn to echolocate.
He's
serious. He's going blind, so being able to use hearing for physical nav is going to be important to him.
Well,
he
also wants to.
That's kind of cool.
That's a really good use. I was going to say, you know, so this is basically the super creepy stalker dude kit. But, you know, whole echolocation when you're blind, not a bad idea.
I love the way that story is. He wants to go to a rangefinder and learn to echolocate. It does kind of sound a little out there.
Oh, yeah.
Sounds like you want to be a dolphin.
When I was going to Big State University, there was a blind kid in the networking division. And one day, during winter, it was very cold, and I was driving past the IT building going to lunch. I saw him with a little beanie cap stretched all the way over his face, and he was running down the sidewalk clapping. I asked him what the hell he was doing later, and apparently he can use echolocation. He can find out where doors and shit are by clapping.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know a dude who clicks his tongue, dude.
That's cool.
Yeah. That amazing skill, awesome. But there's a major flaw with it. It can't detect holes directly in front of you.
I see that being a problem.
It can be a massive problem. But this guy, he rode a bike. He could ride a push bike.
Wow.
Not through traffic or anything.
Yeah,
through a reasonably, like, if there were columns and posts in the road, he could move out of the road. Wow. He was very good at it. But he'd been doing it since he was like 11 years old or something, and he was 35 when I met him.
Still, after the show, now I'm seriously considering blindfolding myself and going around the house clapping and seeing how many times I walk on the wall.
You're going to hurt yourself, Morps.
Especially the shit I keep around my house. It's like fall down. Oh, yep, that was a pile of computers. Fuck.
Morps, yep. If you do this, you need to recruit it.
Yeah, so you all can hear in the background. Ow!
Crash!
I can see drunken echolocation races at the meetup in our future.
I think I've just thought of a new smartphone app.
Yeah.
Oh, speaking of which, where are these simple voice stress analysis apps? Is that a thing? I didn't know that was a thing. Is that just sort of like... I've never heard of this. I feel like that's like not some sort of easily accessible, awesome thing that works.
Well, now I'm Googling it. There's one on the iPhone.
Oh.
And, here's one on the Advanced Lie Detector Plus on Google Play. The free. And there's a lot of people saying it sucks. Needs work. Nice program. Go to hell. It's a joke. Oh.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
I don't know if that's a thing or not.
Pretty sure it isn't.
But, all right. I'm just now getting pictures of all of us trying this echolocation thing. Oh. You know,
and the trip to the hospital was great. I enjoy those American hospitals. All the gunshot wounds in the lobby. It's great.
It's going to be great. You know, we're all going to be blackout drunk, running down the highway, just clamping our hands, being able to find the hotel.
We're from the internet!
Oh. Wow. Either going to get arrested or sent to a freaking... what do they call mental hospitals now? They had a better name for it.
Re-education centers.
The loony bin. I think I'm gonna the loony bin. You know what? I think time for this. Yo! Hadouken! All right. What I have for Digital Dojo tonight is kind of on the light side, but it's still pretty fun. It's a fun concept. Adafruit put together a guide for using a Raspberry Pi as a Bitcoin mining device. The little slug from their guide is, building this project will allow you to use the Raspberry Pi as a headless controller and status monitor for your USB Bitcoin mining devices. So, I guess to clarify, the Raspi is not actually mining. It's using these ASIC... I have ASIC. The name for it. I'm sorry, ASIC Block Eruptor USB miners, which is where they take these... FPGA dedicated Bitcoin mining devices, and they run them just on USB. So, you know, of course, Adafruit has a guide on putting in an LCD that displays hash rate, error rate, you know, the network, as well as the total mining time and uptime. And so looking through the guide, kind of the first thing I would have done is ditch the LCD shield and just use a keyboard and a monitor for programming thing, and then just unhooking it when you're done, because all you care about is that it still runs, right? And check it from another machine. And, you know, the other thing is, getting your hands on these little USB ASIC miners is not cheap. Adafruit recommends going to BitMint to get them, and they run from $250 to $350 there. But I was able to find some of them on Amazon. I think there were like 5 available, and they were $300.
Yeah, that's so, what I heard. They're extremely expensive and rare from what I've seen.
Yeah, now, if you go to the site that makes them, or the site, one of the sites working on the design of the device, which was asicminer.co, it looks like they're getting ready to ramp up production of them, so the cost on the things might come down. But I'm just looking at Adafruit's design there, and they've got 4 of these guys plugged into a Raspberry Pi. So they've got nearly $1,000 worth of USB Bitcoin miner plugged into a $25 computer.
Wow.
But I will. I'd be willing to bet that the power consumption of a build like that versus your traditional Bitcoin mining rig that uses like the 12 graphics cards is probably a lot better. I don't know if it's comparable or not, though.
You gonna save money on power?
I would assume you'd save money on power, but I don't know how effective it is versus the traditional rigs.
That's about the only thing I could see it doing, is saving a bit of money on power.
It'd probably cost about the same to build. Those little USB miners are not cheap. Apparently they run about 300 megahertz, so. Big, you were playing around with an FPGA. I mean, how hard is it to actually rig up one of these things?
Not really. Well, it depends. You need to do VHDL, which is just a hardware descriptor language.
Sure.
And if you know how to implement the Bitcoin crypto in VHDL, it's not hard. Or you can just go to opencores.org, I think it is, and find a Bitcoin miner.
Somebody's written it for you?
Yeah, somebody's already done it. It's easy to get it set up. You know, just buy a $30 FPGA card that on eBay, you know, some cheap shit from China, and you're good to go.
So, is one of those as good as these little $300 USB miners?
I have no idea what's on the miner. Presumably, it's got some onboard RAM, which the FPGA alone won't have. It's also got USB circuitry, but one issue with the $30 little cheapies, depending on what you get, you might need to get a JTAG programmer, which they're not cheap.
What, really?
If you want a good JTAG. One, yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I don't remember a JTAG thing being that. Oh, I'm thinking FTDL cable. Never mind.
Yeah, FTDI cables. JTAG's kind of weird.
I get you a bus pirate. That thing can do JTAG, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So. Oh, well. That's pretty much all I've really got tonight. So, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it and looking for new music to add. Of course, every Thursday, Pure Decking. Every Tuesday, Shoot the Noise. Or, I'm sorry, Shoot the Noise is Wednesdays.
Yep.
Tuesday is Missing Dialogues. Saturdays is I Have Nothing, and am I forgetting something?
I Have Nothing?
I said I Have Nothing.
Oh.
Did that one.
I have no idea.
Big is NR7 cover. I did.
I have no idea.
VSV.
Yes, Big, are you going to start NR7?
Apparently.
Yeah, VSV, is NR7 coming back anytime soon?
I don't know about anytime soon. I do want to get it back up, but yeah, I need to kind of redesign the show layout a little bit.
Yeah, so that's all I've got. Anybody got any final comments before I hit play on this music here? I'll take the crickets as a no.
Stitcher, this is Sarah. Pick up if you're there. I'm at the